I absolutely use scripting, but I don't write it. I don't change it. I use a methodology. If you are a good leader, you know that it's a business call. This is a business call with a good customer experience. So you want to use most refined, best words to get the business decision as quickly as possible. This is not a, how are you? I'm excited. I can't wait to spend, you know, $20,000 on my roof or windows. It's about the most unglamorous appointment you book besides a dentist. So you have to listen. Active listening was one of the first things I was ever taught. And it was like, listen to that customer.
Have you ever felt like there's a secret club of successful contractors and you're left outside? Want in? Well, you just found the entry door. Welcome to the Wealthy Contractor Podcast. Each episode, we pull back the curtain, revealing the stories, strategies, and secrets that top leaders use to grow their home improvement business and enjoy more success, more wealth, and more freedom. Discover more at thewealthycontractor.com. Now let's get into today's episode. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Wealthy Contractor Podcast. This is Brian Kaskavalsian, and with me today is Corey Minzik from All American Roofing. Hi, how are you?
Hi, excellent.
Good to see you.
You too. Great to be here.
Okay, so this person right here is like one of the top call center people in the home improvement industry. You came up through some pretty incredible organizations and worked for some pretty incredible entrepreneurs. So tell us a little bit about your background before we get into strategy and what it takes to really build a great call center. Tell everybody a little bit of your background, because it's pretty cool.
Excellent. Thank you. So I started in 2009. I actually read a little classified ad in the Annapolis, the Capital newspaper. And it said, are you this person? And it had like three or four bullet points. And I read it and I said, I'm this person. This is me. And at the time I was working in oil and gas out of Denver, and I knew the contract was coming to an end. So I called the company. I knew somebody's spouse that worked there. And I said, this is me. So after that, I walked in and David Yoho Jr. gave me a disc profile, interviewed me. And after several interviews, I was hired by him at Thompson Creek Window Company for my first contact center with zero experience. And I was awful at first, really bad. So I had to be the best agent. And then I had to be the best confirmer with the achieved issue rate, demo rate, methodology. So it took me almost 4 weeks to become the best agent, and then another 4 weeks for the confirmation. And on a second time he returned, David Yoho turned to me and said, you're awful. And I said, what do I need to do to be better? And he said, that was the day I knew you were going to be great. So yeah. He really helped coach and train me on how to be the best confirmer. And so that started my career in call centers back in 2009.
Wow. So I just saw David recently at that event we were at together. It was so good to see him. I hadn't seen him in a while. And he's going to come on the podcast soon. Yeah, I'm excited about that. But I didn't know that part. I didn't know that David was the one that actually hired you there.
Yeah, and it was interesting because we ended up working together the first year in contact center and the last 2 years at Thompson Creek on the back end, because I moved to the back end after we grew so quickly. And I did not take his advice 1 month. And I remember he walked in and said, you have a demo rate problem. And he asked me if I knew why. And I said, yes, I didn't focus on. He gave me clear things every month to achieve the lift in the demo rate or the issue rate. And that 1 month, I did my own thing. So yeah. That was the first and last month I didn't take his advice.
Yeah. So you were at Thompson Creek, which Thompson Creek is a pretty incredible company. For the longest time, they were known for I then correct me if I'm wrong, but they were known for having the biggest volume out of one location of any company in the country. Is that right?
Correct.
Yeah. And the owner there, Rick Wiest, who I've had on the podcast, but it's been a really, really, I haven't talked to Rick in a while. One of, without question, one of the greatest entrepreneurs I think I've ever met. Without question.
Absolutely.
That guy, he's one of those guys that it's just like, it looks effortless. From the outside, it looks effortless. Now, you were on the inside a lot more. Obviously, you were there every day. Let's just talk about that real quick, just for a minute. As the entrepreneur, as the owner of that company, what do you think made him or makes him so good?
Rick is extremely patient. Mm-hmm. He's brilliant. And as a leader, he never showed kind of this stress, right, that we were all feeling or seeing as the company excelled and grew and the factory was putting out, you know, more and more windows. Rick was just always steady.
Yeah.
And I think it taught us the way he was helped us reflect as leaders. He also invested in the best practices.
Yeah.
Something like, you know, the David Yoho system. He was systemic. He was extremely organized. And so as you watched Rick do his thing as a leader, it was very easy to follow in his footsteps. I remember one day he walked into the company and he said, I think you guys walk in here and it's like gambling every day. It's like Vegas and you love it. And in some sense it was, but with Rick's kind of just ease and always being behind us, and no problem was ever too big, that there was never any, you didn't feel like you worked in this reactive organization.
Right.
We were very proactive and just kind of, you know, kept moving the needle forward. And one thing about Rick Wiest, which I think tells a lot about him as a leader, especially in this area, is he branded Thompson Creek.
Oh, yeah.
And that jingle, I mean, I remember back in, you know, the Thompson Creek jingle, it was on TV. We would sing it in the call center, not because we were told to, just because it had a catchy thing. So, and it
what
really made me.
What was it?
It was this 1-800, you know, like 37 Creek or something. We had the creek at the very end, right? And so customers called, they just typed in the number online, and it just made, you know, being on the phones that much more fun when they said, I saw your commercial. I think we were the first ones to be sponsors of the Capitals with hockey. So it was a big, you know, Thompson Creek would come up during the games several times, and it just, people would call in during the games excited, you know. Yeah. So at 8 o'clock at night, they're calling in to say, I just heard Thompson Creek. So really, he taught us a lot, and he just was a revolutionary leader in this industry, you know. Just, I felt grateful to work within that organization. So, and he came from both the manufacturing background, which was unusual to learn.
Yeah. What's interesting is that when we did the podcast episode, he talked about how he basically had his family business was making windows, and how it was like $1 million business when he got there, and how over the course of a couple of years, they basically, like, he built the whole retail side of the business and shifted the focus of the manufacturing from contractors to just his company, Thompson Creek. And it's interesting that you say he is so steady and measured. Like, and look, again, my interactions with him have been in the, you know, maybe hours. Yours was like years, you know, so you knew him more, but you got that impression from him. Now, look, Rick Wiest is alive and well. We're talking about him as if past tense. No, he's alive and well. I've got to reach out to him. I got to have him back on again. But anyway, okay, Corey. So we talked about that. So that's kind of cool. It's always interesting to learn about the leader, you know, and what made the leader great. And what's cool about that is he gave you an environment where you could shine, where your natural strengths came out, but also you had a coach who was David Yoho. So, okay. So you started in the call center, you got good, you listened, And then, okay, so then what happened?
We expanded. We grew like crazy.
Were you just on the phones or were you a manager at that point?
No, I was the leader of it. I was hired as the call center leader from the start.
Right. When you got there, how many people were in the call center?
I remember clearly there was a U shape of 9 people.
Okay. And as you grew, where did it get to?
As we grew, we were 50, went to 50 agents and then 75. So we grew fairly quickly in those first few years.
Yeah. Okay. And that was you. You grew it from 9 to 75.
Yep. I had at one point I had both. So I had about 50 in the regular center and then 20 in the customer service center.
Okay.
But when we moved to a new building, we kind of had one big contact center.
Okay.
And then shortly after that, Rick asked me to go to the back end and work on service measure logistics, structuring that in the back end as we grew, which was really fun.
Cool. Okay. And then?
And then after 6 years at Thompson Creek, I moved on to Window Nation. So as our call center director.
You went to work for Harley and Aaron. Harley and Aaron have both also been on the podcast before. And again, Harley, incredible entrepreneur. Absolutely incredible entrepreneur. Biggest, and look, Harley, if you're listening, I love you, but you are the biggest pain in the ass ever. But you and I, we had this conversation last week. He is, but he pushes you to be good. And you tell us. Yeah, I have my own experiences with him, but boy, once you prove yourself to him, he is your champion.
Yes. Yes. Harley is brilliant and a brilliant marketer in this industry. And I've never seen anybody make the phones ring like he could.
Yeah.
So it was incredible. Exciting to hear him buy a TV spend or put an ad in the Washington Post and walk in the next day and we're setting, 100 sets in 2 hours and it's just phones are ringing off the hook and, Harley's sitting there looking at his data and he's brilliant. Absolutely brilliant and taught me a lot. I came out of this contact center thinking I kind of knew it all and it going to another company with a different, not a factory in the back. We had to work with vendors. I couldn't, at Thompson Creek, I could walk into the factory and say, I need a double hung in Fairfax now. We broke it. I have a 40 window install. I didn't have that luxury. And it was really exciting. Harley was super charismatic too with the contact center staff and just as he blew up the marketing. I mean, he took care of our team and brought us in gear and it was just so exciting.
When you got to Window Nation, how many locations did they have? Do you remember?
Yeah, so we only had, I was back when I started there, we actually were over by the airport, over by BWI. And that was when one of the things when Harley brought me on, he said, we're going to build a brand new contact center and you're going to help us design it. And we're going to do this together. And so that was the first time we had 4 people in the call center.
What year was this?
2014.
14. Okay. Which is about, I think I started working with him a little bit after that, because I think they were in the new building.
Yes, you came in when we were in the new building.
Yeah, I came when we were in the new building. Yeah, yeah. But we grew, they're still work with G4, and I don't even know how many offices they're up to now. I mean, Harley and Aaron are pretty much out of the business, but they must be at, 20-ish locations by now?
More than that, yeah.
More than that, yeah, yeah, yeah. I don't even know. But so you started there. There was 4 people in the call center? No way. Okay, and then when you left, how many people were there?
So I kind of did the same thing that I did at Thompson Creek, where I started in the contact center, and then I went over to the production back end. When I actually pulled out of the call center, I was only there for a few years, and then we were actually fairly small then. We were only about 20, but we were doing a lot of business, and that was when I moved into the tech systems and the back end and kind of a more strategic role. Instead of the contact center.
Cool. Now, let me ask you this. I don't know if we talked about this. So Rick and Harley, their businesses essentially compete against each other. How did Rick feel about you going to Window Nation?
You know, that I really don't know. I think, you know, I think I've, one thing I've done with each place that I've left is I've stayed in touch with the contact center director and the team. And, you know, I worked over at Thompson Creek very closely with George Schaub and several people at Window Nation that I've just always kept that relationship with, because I think contact center, we do share a lot of our values and, you know, secrets together. So I've always honored the fact that I felt so lucky. You know, I felt lucky at Thompson Creek. I felt lucky at Window Nation. So I just kept in touch with all, you know, I still keep in touch with those organizations, because they built a foundation that I can't teach, right? You can't get that back when you watch an owner go from, you know, some success to just massive overnight.
Yeah.
It's just so exciting to be on that runway with them.
Yeah. But Rick was probably good. It's like he probably just wanted you to do good in your career. And I would imagine it probably wasn't. And that's the interesting thing about those guys. All of my friends that are in that category of the Rick Wiests and the Mark Curry, Brian Gottlieb, Brian Elias. I mean, I can go down the list of all of these people. They're not afraid of the competition. It's all about how do we internally get better every day. They don't worry about what other people are doing. They only worry about what they are doing. Anyway, so let's talk. Okay, so that's your background. So I wanted everybody to hear Cordy's background, because if anybody knows about call centers, there she is. And so let's talk about, so a lot of people misunderstand what a call center is and does. I think a lot of people don't understand how to build a good call center and the importance of a good call center. And so let's start there. What is the job of a call center? And let's just say that a call center could be one person that handles the phones to hundreds. And so what is a call center, or you call it a contact center? Okay. So we're going to use those interchangeably.
Either works. Yeah.
Contact center, call center. What is the job of a call center?
The main job of the call center, and if they miss this, which sometimes leaders like us often do, unless we're trained properly, is, you know, our job is to get these leads, regardless whether they're what type of lead it is. Our job is to get that lead set and issued and demonstrated. Most importantly, demonstrated, right? You can set leads all day, but if that representative cannot go into that home and pitch the product, we have no chance of ever closing it. So a lot of us call it the system. And the system is, within each company, you have your own system. And the very first person that must follow it is the call center. If the call center doesn't follow it, they can break the entire company. So, and that is so important. And you could be breaking the Canvas leads, the inbound leads. It doesn't matter what lead it is. If you are not following the system within your contact center, on the phones, the confirmation team, the way you issue the leads, the way you look at the demonstrations in the home, the ones that didn't demonstrate, it's a role where you have to be so, you have to follow everything every day. You can't stop. Like, I remember Rick used to walk in and I need to know by 11 a.m. the following day why every single appointment the day before did not demonstrate. Either it's me or it's sales, right? It's not the lead, because I said it, I issued it, right? I confirmed it. So it's just a system that you follow. And then once you get it right, the NSLI is going up, you know, the close rates are going up. It's this like insane energy, you know, and then the marketing person is looking and saying, oh, let's do more TV, more radio. So but if you break the cadence of what you are doing within the company, it's linear, right? So if contact center messes up or call center, nobody else can do their job.
Yeah.
Right. If you don't feed the reps don't have leads to run, nobody can close. So that I kind of like that. Like, I like the pressure. I like the pressure that when you walk in that day, the board could be empty and you got to fill it up, right? Or you have to make sure the board could be filled with stuff that we can't demonstrate. And you have to have the group, and you have to be proactive enough to not be issuing those leads.
It is such a critical piece of this business. You know, companies, when they're smaller, million, $2 million, mostly getting their leads from internet marketing, aggregators, referrals, repeat. You could build a million, $2 million business just on those three things. And what's critical in, especially with like aggregators and even online internet marketing leads, is somebody's got to answer the phone and somebody's got to sell somebody on an appointment. And in order for you to really make that work at that level, million, $2 million, where you're essentially outsourcing your marketing, letting other people do it, if you don't have a good call center in place, and it's just the marketing, this is why people will say, well, that marketing doesn't work. Okay. Is it the marketing that doesn't work? Is it the lead, or is it your inability to answer the phone the right way, to set the lead the right way, to confirm it the right way, to issue it the right way? You know, what is it? And then when you get past that 2 million, you know, you want to go now to 3 to 5 million. Now you got to start layering in other forms of marketing. So now you got to bring in print. Maybe you'll start doing events. You might start doing some direct mail, maybe even TV and radio, maybe. And now that foundation that you've set with the call center now is what's going to help propel the business to that $3 to $5 million, because now you're bringing in other forms of leads. You've got more salespeople. So that's critically important, is setting that right foundation. And so with all of that, let's go all the way back. So somebody that's got, I want to hit the different categories, if you will. So somebody's got a million, $2 million company. They've got one person, let's say that's answering their phones or deal, that's their call center, contact center. What do they need to be successful?
So I think one of the things within any contact center is understanding your costs, how many hours it takes to get a demo from like one agent or 10. The cost of, one of the biggest costs is filling the board with a lead we can't demo. So one of the things I always tell my management team in this industry is we can't get time back. So if I need 400 leads for tomorrow to get issued, if we fill 50 of those that are not demonstrable homes, we've lost the opportunity. Because I took...
Define non-demonstrable. I'm sorry. And for this example, knock a couple zeros off the number. We need four. We have two salespeople. We need four leads, four issues tomorrow, or four appointments.
So those four sales reps need to be able to go in the home and show the customer the roof, the siding, the windows, right? If they go to the home and they don't own it, or they don't live there, or the owners aren't there, they're in Florida, but they called us and we didn't realize that they wanted a price over the phone. So that sales rep, and it's imperative that the call center leader knows that, and that they understand the impact of, we just dispatched a guy, plus we lost that time in the schedule, and now we have another lead tomorrow. Those four leads today, I've got four tomorrow that I could have done today. So it's like this domino effect. And if you don't get ahead of it, it could be, like you said, it could be four leads, and you have to make sure that all four of those are demonstrable for those sales reps, because they can't close if they can't show the customer the product, or their home is not, you know, what we need. And that cost of, it takes you a couple times and you're in the call contact center or call center, and somebody walks in and is like, who set that? Who did that? And you're just like, oh my gosh, that's the 123, you know, Main Street. We shouldn't have gone there. So it takes you a couple times of feeling that, to understand that you wasted, you know, the company's time. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, because look, every day this business starts with zero. Every company starts in the exact same place. They start at zero. And if you want to sell four jobs today, let's say, you gotta run 12 leads minimum. And those 12, like you said, we better be able to demonstrate those, because if we can't demonstrate them, we're not going to hit our number today. And if we don't hit our number today, then we can't get that back. That 15,000, 12,000, 10,000, whatever the number is, we cannot get that sale back today. And so that's the critical job of the call center, is to make sure that they're filling the board with good leads. What does it take? Like, how important is scripting, training, role playing?
So the one thing with that is some people will get way too down this rabbit hole and say, I write scripts. Listen, I've done this for a long time. I have never written a script.
Really?
I've never changed a script. If you are a good leader, you know that it's a business call. This is a business call with a good customer experience. So you want to use the most refined, best words to get the business decision as quickly as possible. This is not a, how are you? I'm excited. I can't wait to spend, $20,000 on my roof or windows. It's about the most unglamorous, appointment you book besides a dentist. So you have to listen. Active listening was one of the first things I was ever taught. And it was like, listen to that customer. And you have to be able to understand that Mrs. Smith is a widow. She's got a house that's 50 years old. She's worried about her windows or her siding or her gutters. And guess what you do? You empathize. And then you say, I know it's short notice, Mrs. Smith, but we can get out there. I can get somebody out there today to inspect your windows, inspect your roof, your gutters. And that's where like you said, you have need four appointments. You just got one, right? Yeah. And then you get another one, and then you get another one. And before you know it, you're like, the board is full with, and Mrs. Smith is saying, thank you. Her experience with your contact center. I always tell the agents, don't tell them what we can't do. Don't, tell them what we can do. And the other thing is, if we can't do it, lose early. I'm sorry. We don't do business in your area, or that's not, something we can come look at.
So that's interesting. No scripting?
I absolutely use scripting.
Oh, got it.
But
okay.
I don't write it. I don't change it. I use a methodology. I've used Dave Yoho's methodology most of my career.
Okay.
And I've used his methodology for
But there is
Canvas.
A script. Let's be clear. There is yes. a script.
Absolutely.
Okay. All right. Yeah. And then what about training? What does training look like at, we're at the smaller company. They're just getting started. They know they need to have a good contact center, call center. What does that training look like?
So training looks like, at first, it's a good week or two in a classroom. And once the agent is proficient with the scripting or methodology, it becomes what we call daily in a 3-on-1 format. The 3-on-1 format is one manager to three agents. And the agent is, as they go into a room and they do a quick phone call, one phone call, you do it, and the manager points to each agent and they pick up where the other person left off. It includes objections or rebuttals. And then as each person sees that, you might pick up and say, that person forgot the address. You just go right back and say, what's the address? So it creates this active listening to make sure that they get each part of what we need to set this appointment, what we call a safe set.
So a week or two in the classroom, and then?
And then on the floor, it's constant. So you never coach from behind. You always coach in front. You tell the agent, I'm listening. You don't talk. You never talk, and you do thumbs up, thumbs down. And then you let them know. And if they're lost, you can usually point to the area on the script where they need to go to. But that kind of coaching, which took me years to learn, at first I was pulling calls and listening to every call. And that creates a culture of fear, because they know the manager's listening to calls. There's six of them in the middle of the call center. So once you stop listening to calls and you start managing, you're leading from the front. They see you. They're like, she's on the phone. She's, and also you tell them, good job, right? You don't scold them on the phone call and say, don't say that. You know, you get them through the phone call and then you write, you actually note. And I tell my managers, next time she's in training, you got to work on rebuttals or the value of the visit or the agreement to terms. And so what that creates is the agents almost crave training because they know it's going to be a positive experience, not that gotcha.
Yeah.
Psst. Hey, you over there. So look, there's a rumor going around. Some of the most successful home improvement businesses aren't just lucky, they're part of something bigger. Some sort of secret group. Have you heard whispers of the Wealthy Contractor Success Society? Look, I found a way you could take a peek inside. Visit theentrydoor.info. Here, take it. Theentrydoor.info. Hurry before the door closes again.
What are the important parts of those interactions that the call center has, the call center agent has with the prospect on the other line? You just rattled off a couple of them, but can you like talk through those? Like, what are the most important aspects of that?
Yeah. So one of the first things we're trying to do is we're trying to find out what kind of problems are you having, right? If you don't have problems, not a lead.
Right.
We just need to know, you know, if I got a brand
new solutions.
Yeah, I have a brand new set of gutters. Can you come check them? No. So you want to know, the agent has to find out, if they don't know where the lead came from, which now they usually do, they need to find out what kind of problems is this homeowner. If it's a problem we can service, then they go right to, here's what we're going to do. We're going to come to your home. We're going to sit down. We're, you know, discuss your options, answer any questions. And then we're going to give you a price that's good for one full year. In writing, et cetera. Does that sound helpful? Yes, great. Well, then we tell the customer, in order to do that, we need two things. I need you to set aside about 90 minutes, and I need you to meet with both homeowners. If they object, we explain why, what we're going to do. We're going to walk around the home. We're going to do this inspection. We're going to see, you know, discuss your options, pick out some products, and then leave you with a price. Does that sound helpful? Oh, yes, it does. You know, then we try to get both. We want both parties there because standard close rate with one party in this industry is 7%. So it just kills our sales reps.
Yeah. Well, and that's a big thing now is how, well, not now, it's been for the last few years, is how do you get around the one leg? How do you say it on the phone in a way that doesn't offend the other party?
So with that, I prefer you don't say anything. Meaning, when are you both available? We work all day. No problem. We'll visit later in the day. And then you wait until uncover their schedule. Corey, we work all day. The kids have soccer. We're busy people. You're never getting my wife and I together. No problem. When's the next time you're both going to be there? Oh, you know what? Actually, we work from home tomorrow. Or we have soccer tonight, but tomorrow's wide open. Then you just, I call it assuming the two leg.
Yeah.
So I don't like to give objections first. I like to just try to get them there. Great. Well, I know it's kind of short notice, but I'm actually going to have a guy in your area at 6 p.m. tomorrow. And that's when we set it, we confirm it. And we're going, right? We're not going to bother these people again. They're busy.
So let's talk about, you've got the basin, you've got one, two call center agents, and now you want to grow. You want to go to the next level. You want to go to 5 million, 6 million. Now you've got five reps, four, five, six reps. Each rep needs to have two appointments a day. Now the pressure's on. You got to set 8 a day or 10 a day or 12 a day, depending on, again, how many you've got. So how does the call center change from that, from the first level to now this next level of a little more sophistication, different types of leads coming in? How does it change?
Great question. I think once you get to that point where you're scaling, you are demonstrating a cost of marketing of 10%. So those four reps, you're putting out leads that your lead mix has the cost of marketing, and your reps are getting a demo out within, say, 10 hours per demo, or, you know, $200 a demo. So you've got that dialed in, so that when the marketing team is ready to grow, you know that you have to set how many you have to set. You look at previous customers. Calling previous customers is not a once a year thing. It's a continual, it should be in your dialer, and you should be calling as a, you know, good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. Smith. Thank you for purchasing that product 4 years ago. Just want to check in and see how you're doing. You'd be shocked. Like right now, we're calling customers during the day. It's slow, right? That's the holidays coming up. It's Memorial Day. We're calling our previous customers to say, thank you for being a previous customer. And if you have good customers, they're not going to hit you with a service call.
Right.
They're going to say, I'm glad you called. So I had one this week. The gentleman said, I bought a product from you 5 years ago, and it was a roof. And he said, it's hail damage. I haven't been up there. Sure enough, you know, we knew it wasn't a warranty issue, but he was so glad we called, right? So that's where I think like you said, as the company's ready to scale, you have to be a little bit more creative. If marketing can't get you double the leads or triple the leads, right? You've got to, you know, or call the rehash, you know, call the rehash and say, thank you for having us out to your home 2 weeks ago. Oh, I'm glad you called. You know, I'm still interested in the product. So you have to be both creative with the stuff in the database, and then also as marketing brings in the new leads to fill up the capacity.
And that's tough, because now at what point do you need a call center manager?
That's a good question. I think once you're at that million, once you get to that point where you have enough revenue, you're sustaining it, and you're looking to grow, but you might have, you know, a couple agents, or Brian, like you said one agent, right? You have to get somebody in there that is going to be systemic and also look at where they can set more or get more, or they can tell marketing, hey, you know, these leads are great. Let's get more of these and less of these. So at some point when you want to grow and you're just not getting that from your current agents, or you're seeing that certain agents have a bad issue rate or a bad demo rate, they're probably doing something within this current space that you need somebody at a higher level to look at. And I think the reason owners need to bring in somebody in the contact center is owners are wonderful, but they don't have the time.
Right.
And that's once they realize that the call center is taking more of their time than running the business is usually when an owner goes, we have to get somebody in here.
Does the call center manager come from the pool of call center agents, or is this a different person, different skill set?
It's a different person, a different skill set. The call center agents can be from, you know, the restaurant industry, or they can be from very different, yes. But the leader, taking the best agent and crowning them the leader, is usually a number one source of failure.
Yeah,
for business
just
owners.
Like taking a good salesperson, making them a sales manager is like really bad. What are the characteristics of a good call center agent? What are you looking for in a call center agent?
So I'm usually looking for personal drive. Somebody that needs a job, wants a job, has to, and shows that they show up on time. You know, somebody that has proven that they're not going to be in a contact center. It is difficult when you come in and nobody shows up. I remember one day with Harley Magdon at Window Nation, we had moved to the brand new contact center. There were 9 of us. All of us, all the women that worked for us, were driving almost a half hour away. We had traffic, and it was myself and Harley only in the call center.
Wow.
And I thought he was going to kill me.
Yeah.
And I looked at him and I said, we moved 45 minutes away from their homes. And so he and I were on those phones for the craziest 20 minutes. But I set 13 leads. It was just insane.
How many did he set? Did he follow the script?
Yes, he was good.
He
loved it. Yeah, we used to always kick him out of the call center. And we'd be like, Harley, he's like, I'm here to help everybody. I'm here. We're like, get out, Harley.
Yeah.
So when we needed his help, he loved it. He's like, you need my help, don't you? I'm like, I do.
Okay, so you need somebody that can show up on time. What else? What are you looking for? Because this is a tough role. It's the same thing over and over again. It's dealing with a lot of rejection.
Yeah, I think that we use the DISC profile. That, you know, if they don't have the DISC profile, you're going to put them in a job that is not natural to them. And I've done it once and I moved that person back to accounting. So I will never do it again.
Accounting. That's an interesting. That's not a profile of somebody that wants to be on the phone at all.
No. And she was miserable.
So what's the DISC profile you're looking for? High I?
So the D and the I needs to be above the midline.
Yep.
And when I started, I think we leaned more towards the D being higher. But now as the years have evolved, we actually look for the I. If the I is a little bit higher, that promoter personality.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's one thing. You cannot do it without that.
Mm-hmm.
And they have to have some personality, some excitement. We're on the phones all day. We don't take ourselves seriously. And so they also need to be money motivated.
Yeah.
These contact centers are about, you don't get paid, you're hourly. And if you get paid only your hourly, you're not going to have a job.
Yeah.
We really put up incentives for the, you know, not the sets, right? We have to have the issues and the demonstrations.
Mm-hmm. So they're getting bonused on issues and demos, not on setting.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah. You're rewarding the ultimate behavior of what you want. Yeah. What percentage of their, so they make an hourly, but then for each demo, can you share some ideas on how you bonus them?
Yeah, I think to start, when you're smaller, you're doing like, you know, $15 a demo. You could see somebody in the field marketing department make as high as $25 or $50 a demo, because that's a much harder demonstration to earn and achieve. But the call center is usually paid per demo. As the company grows, it might be not as much per appointment, but most of the time they're getting paid per demonstration, which you want to encourage them to set, because if it gets issued, it's going to demo. So if they set tight, what we call it the 72-hour rule. So one sit in 3 days is what demonstrates. Once you start going out 3 days, the cancellation rates go up.
Yep.
And you lose the lead because it's so expensive.
Right. Yeah. And especially now, I mean, leads have gotten so, so expensive, and every opportunity counts. Every opportunity on a phone, on a form fill, at an event, at past customer, I mean, whatever it is, every single opportunity is so critically important. And that's where a good call center comes in. So we talked about pay. We talked a little bit about KPIs, or we talked about the person. Hold on. We talked about the type of person you're looking for. It's an I, someone with personality. Is there any particular place that these people come from? Somebody that was a hostess at a restaurant, I'm just pulling something out of my butt, but you know, like, did you find that there's any particular type of person that fits well into this role?
Yeah, I think the service industry is a great industry to pull from.
I would think so, yeah.
Yeah, they're used to working long hours, they're on their feet. Another really good place to pull from within the organization itself is, I usually would work with both the call center, events, and canvassing or field marketing. The field marketing team, once they're done knocking, they can't knock for, you know, 10 years. So those team leaders, those field leaders, they make great, they can come into the call center and they appreciate being outside the weather, outside the cold. Same with a field marketing person that maybe has done it for so long and has reached their limit. They make great contact center agents. And it's imperative with each call center that you have promotion from within.
Yeah.
So that I very seldom bring in people from the outside. You get the agent. The agent can go on to confirmation. They can go on to team lead. And then same thing with the field marketing or the event staff. They have an opportunity within the contact center or call center to come inside the organization.
The last thing I want to ask you about, and this is like, to me, this is the one of the most critical things, is KPIs. KPIs are, how do we know we're successful? So what are the most important KPIs that you are tracking in the call center?
One of the most important is overall for the call center is keeping the cost of marketing down. In order to keep the cost of marketing down, focus in on your setting and your issue and demo rates. So an inbound lead, a high intent lead, you know, it should issue, you want to be looking to issue that at the, you know, 70 to 80% range. A field marketing lead or an event lead might be closer to a 50%. So while that might be your goal, Brian, like you said, when you only have four leads, the way a contact center or call center director can change the company is you can take an issue rate up 10%, up, you know, 20%. And the way I do it is I reverse engineer it. So I go look at my demo rate and I go look at who's demoing the most. And then I rewind the lead, the sales rep, the contact center person. I listen to the phone calls and I figure out, why is that one demoing at 10% more, 20% more, right? And then all of a sudden, that's where you become, the marketing person looks at you and says, what did you do? You're like, you know, I didn't do a lot, but guess what I did? I looked at why this event person sets and issues at 60% instead of 40%. And so you start, I call these people like diamonds in the rough, you know, they're rock stars. But then you start learning, I can issue her leads at this percentage and demo at this percentage. You can, you know, your number one sales rep, he can close anything. But when you look at the lead mix and you rewind it back, so that's kind of how we hold ourselves accountable. The owner might say, I want 80% issue rate, 80% demo rate. That's the only way we're going to make money in this business. But you as a leader have to reverse engineer it. And until you reverse engineer it, you can't tell the owner why it's not working, right? You have to be able to tell them why. These events are awful. These field marketing leads don't work. But when you tell them why it works, that's when you become a great leader, because you're telling them, hey, get me more of this. Get me more of this. And that's what when the energy, I think, Brian, whether you're setting 10 leads a day or three, it just goes, everyone gets so excited because you found the KPI that you can grow.
You did something a little interesting there. So I'm going to see if I can pull on that thread a little bit. So you said inbound high intent leads like TV, direct mail, anybody that's calling in, you gave us 70 to 80% is a good benchmark for that. Can we go down the list? Can you give us good benchmarks for, let's say you said shows and events, about 50%?
Yeah.
I'm not going to hold you to it, just kind of an idea.
Yeah, that's...
Give people an idea of what kind of best in class looks like.
Yes, I would say a fair with shows and events is a 50% issue rate. But if you have, like I said, this reverse KPI engineering is key.
Yeah.
Because what I do is I open the board up. So I keep those slots open for today and tomorrow for that big show, right? So
yeah.
Then all of a sudden your issue rate could be 80% because you are not
focused.
Yes. Marketing turned off. They turned off the TV, the radio. And you have a wide open board for show and events. So then all of a sudden, that's when you're issuing, because they know at the shows, the board's wide open for them.
Yeah. Okay. Now, let's go to somebody fills out a form online. What's a good set rate for those?
Is that a form that's exclusive to the company or a form that is...
No, we're not at aggregators. This is your website. Somebody filled out a form on your website.
Yeah, those are, we are, usually setting those almost immediately. The dialer is calling what we call in the immediately. The dialer picks it up, calls it. And a lot of times the customer's telling us, I just filled out a form, and the agent's saying, yes, thank you. That's probably one of the easiest sets, right? They're high intent. They went to your website. They actually filled out the form for you, or, you know, and they're expecting to, a lot of times they're just saying, yes, I want you to come out.
But the key there is what? Speed. Speed. Speed to lead is key. Okay. So somebody filled out a form. What about a, let me see. What's the next one? Well, Canvas. Canvas lead.
So a Canvas lead?
Good set rate is about where? Good demo rate, I should say.
A good Canvasser should be demoing in that 70 to 80% range. You're okay. Not, you, if they're not, if they're bringing in stuff that is not demonstrating, either the call center's letting it in, or the person at the door is pitching something that is not something we can do. And it's either uncovered in the set or in the confirmation. So you want to stop it. But once you find those guys that are kind of what I call a wrecking ball, the call center, you can hear it on floor. They're like, did you guys hear Damien's in Maryland today? And everyone's like grabbing his sets because he's got a charisma. And the thing I love Canvas leads. Love them. I think they're, when your board is not full and you put a van together and you're like, yes, you know, the phones can ring off the hook from 3 p.m. till 8 o'clock. And just, and those buyers are different, right? They're not expecting to buy. There's no right. competition. Right. So when you send your number one sales rep out, they fell in love with Damien that knocked on the door, right? And then they're going to fall in love with Drew, who's going to pitch the product. So it's a, that's a, to me, that's one of the, that's an art in this, in that space to handle those.
Okay. And then what about the kind of the, well, I won't say anything. I will just call it aggregator leads. What about those? What's your set? What's a good set rate on those?
So the set rate on those are usually, you know, 10 to 25%, depending okay. kind of where you are in that space. A bad day is 4% or you're turning them off. And they require a lot of patience. So they can flood your database. They can flood your agents. They can get past you. You can actually, you know, you can fill the board with a lot of stuff that you can't, you have to cancel. So aggregates are a fine, I find that contacts, I find that people in the space either love them or hate them.
Well, and over the last, you know, few years, people have come to rely on them entirely too much without, I mean, look, the key to a, to aggregator leads is the call center. It's absolutely the key. Speed to lead. And who are you getting on the phone to go chase after this lead, this person that if you get to them a minute too late, which is usually like from the minute that you got the information, they already forgot what they did. I got something last night. I opened a package that got to the house days ago. I thought it was one thing, and I open it up and I look at it. I go, I didn't order this. What is this? And I go, I was curious, and I was like, oh yeah, I remember. I ordered this. But it's kind of like the same thing. It's like you go online and you're essentially telling this whatever you saw an ad, and then now all of a sudden you're getting pelted by all of these people calling you, and it's like, whoa, wait a minute. The hell did I just do?
It can be a very difficult call, but if you get them, if you can capture them in and not be part of a government program or not be part of, these people really have a need and you can get the set, it's...
And that's where personality helps a lot, right?
Yes.
The person that's calling, if they've got good personality and they're not, you know, a robot.
Yes.
Or, you know, depressing or sound like they're from Pakistan or something. Yeah. No offense to Pakistan people, but, you know, we all get those calls.
Well, and I think, too, that they can, there has to be some they can judge it too. The agent can say, ah, this lead source, I don't like it. And then that's the worst. Right. They all chat on the floor. They're, did you see that lead source? They're coming in like crazy today. And they're all, they're talking the customer out of it, which is even, so that requires a, I would say a fierce set of management eyes on those leads as they're coming in to identify what's working and what's not. I think today most of us are mixing our leads with a lot of stuff that we can now control. Might be more expensive, but I think, Brian, you said it well. We all got caught in the lead ag space and got really dependent.
Yeah, we were in a, it was a take marketing for a while during COVID. And now we're back to what this business was always. It's make marketing. You got to go out every single day and make a lead. And you got to get people interested. Then you got to get them into the call center so that that person does their magic, sets them. The appointment gets issued. Then it gets demoed. And then you do a good presentation, give them a good reason to buy, and make it easy for them to buy with financing. And all along the way, I mean, we talk all the time about how this business is formulaic. And people like all of these names that we've mentioned, the Rick Weiss of the world, the Harleys, the Brian Elias, Brian Liebscott, I mean, I can go down the list. Every single one of them manages this business by numbers.
Exactly.
And, yeah. And that's, it's a numbers driven business. And if you get the numbers right and you put the right people in the right seats, you can build a hell of a business.
Yes. And I think you can scale it, and you can also, you don't have to go, like you said, we don't have to go crazy overnight. And, you know, but if you do it systemically and you'll find what works for your team and your company. And it's so exciting to watch your team get behind a successful agent, a salesperson, or even the marketing team that's bringing in better leads. And one thing I do think, Brian, that's important today too is reviews. The reviews that come in, and having a lot of, you can ask for reviews, and you can, but having customers that when they reviewed you well, and you call them back, and they, it's, you can't, one bad review is rough.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Well, Corey, this has been great. Thank you so much for being here, taking the time out. Thanks to Sean for letting me have you for a little while. I know how busy you are over there. And so thank you so much. I appreciate you and all of what you do, and what a background you have, and the people that you've worked with, and the guy you work with now. I mean, he's a cool dude. He's got, you know, he's a numbers driven guy.
He
and
is.
He's got ambitious plans, and that's why he's really fortunate to have you as part of the team. And I'm fortunate that I get to interview you here for an hour and listen to all your good stuff. So thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. All right, everybody. I hope this was valuable. We covered a lot of stuff, and yes, we meandered here and we meandered there, but I think we hit a lot of the high points, and there's so much meat in this episode that I hope you got a ton of value out of it. And until next time, Brian Kaskavalsian, and this is the Wealthy Contractor Podcast. Thanks, Corey.
Hope you enjoyed this week's episode. For insights on skyrocketing your home improvement business and accelerating your journey to the success, wealth, and freedom you've always dreamed about, be sure to get your free copy of my best-selling book, The 7 Secrets to Becoming a Wealthy Contractor, at www.thewealthycontractor.com. And don't forget to follow us on your favorite podcast platform so you never miss an episode. See you next time.
This episode is brought to you by OneInFund. Tired of losing sales to slow, complicated financing? With OneLook by OneInFund, you get the only patented multi-lender platform built by home improvement pros just like you. One soft pull application gives every customer a real first through third look. No gimmicks, no endless counters, just real buying power from lenders that actually fund deals. No more chasing approvals or losing sales to partial approvals and clunky experiences. OneLook streamlines financing so you can sell more faster. Plus, AI-powered insights help you close smarter, boosting your approval rates and commissions. More approvals, more sales, more money in your pocket with people who speak your language. Visit OneAndFund today and start closing bigger deals with ease.